I take it you just finished listening to the latest episode.
Yes.
What did you think?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like the reaction to what Brian's been saying is kind of overblown. Like, okay. I don't think he said anything particularly different from what I'd expect in that episode.
I think the real surprising thing to me was, like, how blown out of proportion everything got. Although, like, I mean, I still have beef with what Brian said, and I think he's wrong, and I guess we can go into that, but, yeah, the way it spiraled was exceptional.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause, I mean, it was, like, a few small things he said that, like, it doesn't seem like he's having a particularly well-defined stance on anything there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, his general reaction, and people, I mean, it was mostly LHC who was,
yes,
like,
I get the feeling LHC eugenics? Was the problem. Yeah. Like, I don't remember him mentioning eugenics at all. He didn't, did he?
No.
No, okay.
Brian said something about, like, eating Ron or something.
Oh, he doesn't want to eat Ron.
I'm pretty sure was a joke.
That's the only thing he's good for. But, yeah, I don't know. So I guess we should, like, quickly describe what happened. In the spoilers channel that Brian can't see, a bunch of people were complaining about Brian's takes, which, okay, to me, basically what it seems to boil down to is that he's got bad cache thoughts, and he doesn't, like, sit down and analyze things and go through, he doesn't do, like, deep thinking about the episode while they're recording, or about the chapter while they're recording the episode, because, you know, I don't know, it's a reaction podcast, I guess, it's not, I figure it's probably not one of those deep philosophical things, but, you know, since he has very different cache thoughts from our community, when he uses those as part of his reaction, we're like, oh my god, that's wrong, and his takes are bad. And, you know, people start saying in this, the spoilers channel, you know, it kind of sucks saying this here because Brian can't see any of it and can't defend himself. If you're going to insult Brian, at least, you know, say something on the no spoilers channel where he can see it and respond. And I think LHC is the biggest Brian hater, and so he posted that meme he made about what was it?
It was the what's it called? Media Sims mock-up?
Yes, exactly. Just, you know, basically sort of excoriating Brian a little bit on, you know, you're as bad as Media Sims with all your nitpicks and not engaging in substance, and Brian kind of freaked the fuck out. And I had no idea why. Like, when you look at that that meme, does it strike you as, like, crazy stalker stuff?
No, like, I can't think of any particular examples, but I'm sure similar things have been done about me in the past. That, and I mean, I don't think Ryan has had much of an internet presence, other than, like, my impression is that, like, he has obviously used the internet before, but it's probably more in things like Reddit, where you're not, like, being a, it's not like a community of people who all know each other. And that's usually, like, that happens, not necessarily when, like, I wouldn't call Brian and LHC friends, obviously, but, like, they know who, or at least LHC knows who Brian is. And it's when it comes down to things like that where, like, you know more about people than just, like, their handle on the platform.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was, like, the first time he responded, it seemed really, like, so out there, Brian's response, that I was like, okay, I know Brian, and I think he's being serious, but there's just no way this can be a serious response, right? So
I did not even realize that was what he was responding to, because it was so not how I usually expect people to see that,
like,
kind of thing.
So everyone kind of played it off as a joke, but then he responded again with the, you know, stop being outside my window stalking me, you creepy stalker. Like, what the fuck is going on? And, he was just really upset and freaked out. I asked Stephen about it later, and Steven said it was because, you know, someone had obviously put time and effort into making a meme of him, and that they had quoted him like with something he said several episodes ago, so like more than a month ago now, right? And he just found that really crazy, creepy, and stalkery that they would remember something he'd said and like put time and effort into making a meme. And like, I mean, if you look at it that way, I can see his point, but I think like Brian just doesn't understand that's what people do on the internet. Like, when you have an audience of thousands of people, sometimes some lines just stick in some people's memory, and a lot of those people have like free time now and then. Like, I got a half hour to kill. I will help entertain my friends by making this funny meme since I know how to make memes, you know? And
I mean, I did think it was funny. Just like, I don't like that it bothered Brian so much. Like, I don't want to do things.
But I don't
that
think it was
him.
Like the fact that he was kind of being poked fun at. I think it was more the fact that he thought this was only a thing a crazy person would do, and it really scared him, and I think he just doesn't realize how much, you know, how many people there are listening, that some of them are going to have free time and skills and will remember a line he said, you know?
I mean, I only think it would have taken, like, 5 minutes maybe to make. Like, it was just some text edited on the video.
I guess it's the whole not being ready for internet celebrity, even though it's only a few thousand people, and that's not a lot of people at all in the grand scheme. It's
is it really that many?
I think it was 2,500 listeners. Yeah, and you know, that's very not many in the grand scheme, but it's a order of magnitude more than most people ever have, like listening to them talking for a couple hours every week.
I mean, I'm used to viewer counts in the context of, like, Twitch live streams, which normally, like, 1,000 is really big for that. But I guess, like, for podcasts, it's, like, over a period of time.
Yeah, exactly, because with Twitch, it's live, and podcasts, you got, like, an entire week to download and consume it at one's leisure. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I can't wait for this quarantine to be over so I can see Brian in person again and just, like, you know, gauge how he's doing and, like, just, you know, be like, hey, man, sorry about everything. We appreciate what you're doing. But, yeah, speaking of, do we want to get into how wrong he was about things?
Okay. Sure, we can do that.
So there were, I guess there were two things in particular that I was like, I don't want to say like he was wrong about them, but it really highlighted the differences between like someone like me who's been in the rationalist community for like, what, 10, 12 years now, and someone who's still basically a person from the, I don't want to say normal world, but yeah, exactly. Like
a
people who have different patterns of thinking and different, ways of recognizing tropes that, like, I was like, wow, I didn't realize how much divergence there had been, and not that it's bad, it's just, like, really different. So, I guess, like, do you mind if I start? Okay.
Sure,
the thing that has been bothering me for, I guess, since the very beginning of this podcast, and still does, is that Brian not only seems to think that Harry is an asshole, which, admittedly, sometimes he is, but, like, lots of times when they think through what is making Harry an asshole, it's that he thinks through things, like, tricky emotional situations or moral conundrums or whatever. Like, he applies his brain and his reasoning to them instead of, like, just feeling things with his heart, you know? And it just seems that it always comes back to, like, yeah, Harry is so cold and distant and robotic, and because he's, like, thinking through why it's wonderful to have a human species and why death is bad, instead of just, like, feeling in his gut, oh, you have hurt these people, and I hate you for it, and my family is wonderful. And it always seems to come back to, like, assholes think, and good people, like, feel things. And where that really, like, I guess came to a head to me recently in the most recent episode was that he was really upset at Harry for, like, being so concerned that maybe all the animals out there and grass is sentient, and Obviously, they use the term sentient because that was the fad at the time. It's not only been recently that the more correct term sapient has come into vogue, but, you know, meaning a thing that knows that it's alive and can feel pain and has self-awareness. And he was like, look, Hermione is right next to you. She's distressed. She's your friend. Why are you not paying attention to her? Instead of, like, you know, looking about this crazy grass bullshit. And on the one hand, I agree emotionally because, like, Stephen asked me beforehand, how would you feel if grass turned out to be sapiens? And I was like, I don't know, not much I can do about it. Sucks for the grass. Like, I didn't consider it terribly seriously because there's a lot more to consider if that's the case. But like, I think, yeah, well, as a start, yeah.
Stop growing grass, maybe. Well, I mean, if all plants are, though, then that becomes a trickier question. Right. So what are you going to do, just, like, genocide them?
Yeah, I guess really you could, like, kill all things that eat plants, but then, like, you're just killing other stuff, and, yeah, it's right.
I don't know. Get the singularity happens.
Yeah, we're going through that as fast as we can.
A priority.
But yeah, he was. I mean, the chapter played it off like, because all of Harry's internal monologues were like, "Ooh, you're a cannibal!" Like making fun of him, because the author knows this is like inherently ridiculous. It felt like, or the inner parts of Harry did anyway. And like as a reader, I'm glad that that happened because I had a very hard time taking it seriously too. And having all of Harry's inner voices mocking him really helped me for that. And that's where like I thought this was gonna go. But on the intellectual level, the problem was that Harry, and he even mentioned this in the chapter, Harry couldn't focus on the grass because his friend Hermione was right there and hurting, and all his emotions said, "Hey, you got to take care of Hermione right now." Even though intellectually he knew that the grass is the most important thing by like untold orders of magnitude. It would be like, you know, if you're in Nazi Germany and you know about all these Jews being genocided somewhere, but you know, your kid just stubbed his toe and you have to go and help your kid out because, you know, it's your kid, it's important to you, and you can feel like, oh my God, I know that there's this genocide going on and they're so much worse. Stupid emotions, they're making me care about my kid more. And it's that kind of contrast that I was expecting it to be. But instead, Brian was like, fuck Harry, he's being such an asshole reading a book on grass when he should be worried about Hermione. And that just seemed... It was interesting how vast the difference is between, you know, people who care about thinking through principles and stuff and just people who are focused on emotions, at least... was my what I got out of that.
I mean, I feel like Brian might have been a bit confused on what the text was saying, because I sort of got the impression that he was, like, thinking that, like, Harry was, like, having to, like, specifically try to pay attention to Hermione despite the grass distracting him. Which I don't... I mean, I think was more in Harry's mind that Hermione was distracting him from the grass. which, I mean, obviously the grass
it's not
actually...
At the very least, it wasn't obvious at that point.
I don't know if that's actually confirmed. I mean, Harry stops caring about it when he learns that, like, snakes can't all speak Parseltongue, but that's not actual proof. Although, I guess we don't... Well, I don't know. You still need to figure out how Parseltongue works to really understand what's going on there. Which Harry certainly has not.
I was trying to... I also got that impression. I think Stephen tried to steer Brian away from that, but it is... I don't know. It seems disappointing to me that Brian read that backwards again, and I'm not sure why that happens. It almost seems like he automatically falls into this, like, oh, Harry's being a douchebag by reading and thinking about things, and so he takes the most uncharitable, not even the most uncharitable interpretation, like, he actually reads it wrong, because that is his assumption, that, like, Harry is falling into a stereotype.
I mean, that happens to me sometimes, where, like, someone says something that, like, when I look back and really think about it, is clearly one way, but that, like, I just don't have the real interpretation anywhere in my, like, conception of what the possible things they could be saying right now are. So I, like, round it off to the nearest plausible thing and do not even notice that's what I'm doing sometimes. So, yeah, it seems like Brian is doing something like that, but it doesn't... That happens rarely, and it's weird when it does happen, and it might just be going on more often for Brian. And, I mean, it's difficult to catch that unless you're talking to people about it. And it's usually in a conversation, so I figure it out. But if you're reading a book, then unless you, like, meticulously go over everything again, you're not necessarily going to notice that you misinterpreted it.
Right. And, yeah, in the chat afterwards, a bunch of people said basically, you know, Harry was right about the grass, and Brian was like, I can't even, and basically noped out of the conversation at that point.
Harry was not right. The grass isn't supposed to actually be sentient.
Right. Well, I mean, that he was right to be worried about that.
Yeah, but, like, if it was, then that would be a very significant concern, and Brian, like... Brian was, like, too overwhelmed by the, like, implausibility of that to really consider that, like, you need... Like, even if you multiply out the improbability of it, it's still a massive thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if all grass was, like, people that are locked in their bodies and have, you know, constant pain and there's nothing they can do about it, that would be moral, tragedy that, like, we would honestly... become the most important thing to take care of before anything else.
I mean, the thing is, the strategy for taking care of that, I mean, step one is still get a ridiculous amount of power, so...
Yeah, that's true.
The thing is, like, figuring out what's going on isn't actually that... I mean, it's something you should do because the time commitment isn't that big, but since you're ultimately not going to be changing your strategy based on that too much, it might not actually, like, be that important a thing to focus on.
Yeah.
But which I guess might be why Harry doesn't seem concerned about it later.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, maybe you would, like, raise the topic with some people that had more power, like the headmaster. Be like, hey, can you, like, look out for... magical spells that give consciousness to grass, because I think this might be an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and bring it up with Dumbledore would be a good idea. Assuming Dumbledore could take him seriously, at least, which I think he could.
I think Dumbledore would, too.
Well, other than the fact that Harry isn't sure Dumbledore is actually a good person anymore.
Right. I really like Brian's, like, uh-oh, is Dumbledore Voldemort?
Yeah, like, that's... It's not true or anything, and there isn't that much evidence in favor of it, but...
No, he said that he had almost no, you know,
Didn't he say that it would be, like, 60-30-ish if he didn't have the outside knowledge that Quirrell hosts Voldemort in canon?
I think he said something like that, yeah.
So I mean, like, he thinks it's an actual, like...
Yeah.
He thinks the book is not... like, has evidence towards it once you put aside the prior that Quirrell is Voldemort.
Which, I mean, is interesting, because it kinda does.
I mean, his reasoning is really cool,
yeah.
Because it's just an interpretation that did not ever occur to me.
And Dumbledore did burn a chicken to death in front of Harry, just to, like, show Harry that he can. That would freak me out, too. If, like, I came into my boss's office, and he had a chicken there. He was just like, oh, hey, watch this, and burned it in front of me.
Man, if I ever were a boss, I should do that.
I think you wouldn't have employees for very long.
I guess.
If a boss did that in front of me, I'd be like, well, it's been great not working for you anymore.
I mean, I feel like the bigger problem is that you get fired by your boss.
Oh, that he would get fired by his boss, you mean?
I mean, yeah, but I mean, Dumbledore doesn't have a boss.
Right,
so.
Did you have more things to say on this, or other things to go expanded?
on this particular topic, I saw that Logan tried to steel man Brian's interpretation of the grass thing.
Oh.
And this was before I had actually listened to the episode, so it seemed reasonable to me, but I don't, like, you left a minus sign on it. I don't know.
Oh, I don't remember what it was now. Can you remind me?
Okay, so Logan says, one, place more valence on whether things have qualia or not. Two, this means that things that have qualia should be protected from suffering, and intelligence is not the important thing here, because humans are important because they feel more, not because they are smart. And therefore, while increasing intelligence of humans is a good thing, being dumb does not remove your moral valence. Mm-hmm. So Harry saying something sufficiently dumb does not have moral valence is bad because it comes from qualia, not from intelligence.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I put a minus on that not because I disagree with amazing, but because I think that is a bad idea, like, in general to have. Like, if that is Brian's interpretation, then I am thumbs downing it and booing at him.
Oh, okay, so you don't think it's an inaccurate guess at what Brian might be thinking?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, this is... I would, like, okay. Have to ask Brian. I don't care to, you know, guess in this regard. But, you know, it is possible. There are a lot of people out there who explicitly think that humans have value and other things do not. Whereas I'm much more, you know, of the opinion that one's level of sapience is what is valuable. And that if, you know, pigs happen to have a self-image, self-awareness closer to humans, then we should be much more concerned about their suffering than we are. And, you know, likewise for grass or aliens that we meet or whatever.
Right, but I think, like, there's this general idea among the people who are, like, oppose valuing intelligence that, like they place it on, like, how much, like, they don't think sapience and intelligence are necessarily correlated, okay. I guess. So that moral worth is based on, like, how much suffering you feel when you are hurt, rather than on, like, not on how smart you are. Which, I think, I mean, that's certainly true. I think the main thing is that, like, intelligence and sapience are correlated to some extent, although, I mean,
I would say to, like, an astounding degree. I mean, once we have artificial intelligence, maybe it'll turn out that they do not become correlated anymore. And, you know, Peter Watts's fiction is absolutely amazing because he has aliens that are, you know, superhumanly intelligent but have no self-awareness at all. They, you know, they're the basically philosopher zombies where they're intelligent but they are not aware of themselves. And that's really cool, but is that actually literally possible? I don't know, and I suspect it's not, but it could be wrong.
Yeah, I used to think, like, obviously your degree of intelligence and your degree of sapience have to be your sentience. I'm not sure which word is correct to use in this case. How strong your qualia are. I used to think they, like, obviously had to be correlated because both are going to have something to do with how complicated your brain is. But I'm no longer, like, I don't think we know enough about consciousness to actually say that. Because, obviously, like, not, most of our brains are not actually contributing to our, or not, like, not all of them are contributing to our consciousness. And, like, I'm starting to think that, like, in general, it's plausible that consciousness is, like, one of the subroutines of our brain rather than a product of the whole.
Right.
And it's entirely possible that, like, that subroutine is not, like, your brain is going to need to have a certain complexity to have consciousness, but, like, saying that that's the important part and then think of intelligence as something separate from that seems like a reasonable interpretation to me.
Okay, yeah.
The thing is, like, consciousness definitely, I think, aids with intelligence to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we evolved it because it makes us smarter, probably.
It's definitely got some kind of value.
Right. So, probably, like, my guess would be that it has value in modeling the actions of others.
Yeah.
Or other animals, I guess, because I don't... I mean, humans probably have it to a greater degree so that we can model other humans, because humans are complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But... So, like, learning that snakes can talk would be evidence that they are more conscious, which Harry is calling intelligence, but even if you're not placing value directly on the intelligence, it's still an important revelation about snakes.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how to bring that back to the original point, but basically, I liked Logan's interpretation. Because that seems like the kind of thing that some people, like, probably believe something along those lines. They probably place value not on the intelligence because they don't think it is the same thing as qualia strength, I guess. But I don't think that's enough to dismiss the grass concern is the problem. Once you think it through more.
Right. Because maybe the grass has also been given that consciousness module.
Right.
Huh.
Because magic.
And yeah, I mean, like, seriously, if... Yeah, magic is crazy and unknown. Sure, I guess you could have smart grass that has no qualia, but you should check first? Kind of like Harry is?
Yeah, doing. Like... Mm-hmm.
As opposed to just not even being concerned about it at all, which is what seemed to be the implied course of action that Harry should be taking, according to Brian.
Right. So I think Brian pattern matched the valuing intelligence, not from the, like, not to this, like, more developed thing of, like, intelligence is correlated with sapience or mm-hmm. whatever, but to just, like, the idea of, like, you know, using eugenics to increase intelligence and stuff like that, because you see intelligence as the most important thing.
Did he say anything like that?
I mean, he did not actually say all that much about this. This is a giant conversation that has sprawled out of, like,
yeah,
a minute of him saying a few small things.
Right.
So
it's, like I said, it was really surprising how big it got over how little of a spark it was.
So, like, it's very difficult to say much without asking him further. Like, this is all basically just speculation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what we're here to do, is it not?
Yes. Yes, it is. So, I guess, in that same vein, when he was talking about Harry and his reaction to Padma Patil, it was Padma Patil, right?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, I often get the two
Patils. That's what I have in my notes.
Okay, cool. And he said that he disliked that Harry had logically come to the conclusion that he should be nice now, instead of, like, feeling it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I got, I don't know. So I don't understand why people are against that. Like, what is so bad about coming to logical conclusions about how you should act, instead of just, like, having this weird boner for being nice to people, you know?
I mean, most people see niceness as a terminal value, I think.
Yeah, I guess.
So doing it for reasons other than because you think it is a terminal value feels, I guess, inauthentic to people. Which, I mean...
But they're not nice to, like, people that they think are bad. Like, they're not nice to people who they think are assholes or to people who they consider Nazis or whatever. So obviously they don't value niceness purely for the sake of niceness to everyone. Or am I wrong?
I feel like that's complicating. Like, when we talk about bad people, like, it's not that niceness is... I mean, I think being nice to people is get good yeah. whenever there is not, like, a very good reason not to be, but... I feel like how people handle evil people is very variant.
Okay.
Because, like, I see a lot of people who just like, I mean, people support the prison system.
Yeah, Yeah.
Which is, I mean, putting aside concerns that, like, how many people in there actually did something that's all that bad? Like, even if you assume that most of them are pretty bad people, like, that does not justify what's going on in America.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are just like, well, they're bad people. We don't have an obligation to treat them well.
Okay.
Which, I guess their rule is, like, be nice to good people or something like that.
I guess...
Be nice to people in my in-group.
I don't understand why people would be so upset that someone logically... Like, someone like Harry, who has issues with empathy and with understanding how other people work, why is it so bad that he logically decided, okay, I don't want to be a Dark Lord, and I am risking, you know, my future allies, I should be nice. Like, that's not a bad thing, right? He logically came to a good conclusion, and he's going to be nice.
I mean, I'm sure, like, anyone you ask is going to be like, this, like, it's better to do the right thing for the wrong reason than to do the wrong thing.
Okay,
and
well,
everyone's going to agree on that, but
I guess,
it's still, like,
yeah, my question is, why is thinking through and making the decision a wrong reason? Like, he's doing the right thing for the wrong reason, you said, but, like, I don't think logicking yourself into that is a wrong reason. I get the feeling, like, a lot of times when people are against someone logicking themselves into being nice, it's because they're worried they don't have any good logical argument for doing good things, and they're just like, well, I just want to bully people emotionally into being nice, because if I had to actually give a justification for why someone should do a thing, I'm screwed, because I don't have the ability to give anyone a good reason. And it seems like, if you can't give someone a good reason to do a thing, why are you trying to force them into doing the thing in the first place? Do you secretly suspect you may be wrong about why being nice is a good thing?
I don't think this is necessarily exactly how the Harry case goes, but, like, in general, being nice because of some other reason, like, because you expect to gain an advantage in the future, from it, is often, like, someone who does that is often, like, not actually caring about the benefits to other people that being nice brings, and is doing it, because they expect to benefit from it, which is evidence that they are a selfish person.
I get...
Like, now, if Harry... Like, Harry is not selfish. He just has a problem with interacting with people well. Yeah. So, it doesn't really... I don't... Like, that concern doesn't really apply to him, I don't think.
I don't know. Well, yes, I agree. It concerns me that I think it's not hard to make the case that being nice and fostering a society of niceness makes the world better. It's like a very simple case to make, honestly, and it's one of the main reasons I like to be nice to people. It just makes life easier and better for me and for everyone that I care for, and this is not a hard argument to make, and
yeah, and I don't think Brian was, like, condemning being nice because you expect people being nice to improve the world. But, like, it was specifically, like, using niceness to manipulate Padme into not bothering Hermione, I believe.
Yeah, I can't get worked up about that. Like, I can see
how people would see it as somewhat questionable, but I'm not, like, bothered by it.
Like,
much.
Afterwards, he and Padme were closer. They were, like, better friends because they'd had this talking and everything, and yeah, he used some of what he learned to scare her into not helping, into not hurting Hermione anymore, which improved Hermione's life and improved Padme's life, and, like, maybe I am too much of a psychopath here, and I don't understand it.
I feel like if it were not accompanied by the ghost thing, it would be a lot less questionable. Because, I mean, depending on whether Harry did his utilitarian calculus correctly, I think it was a fine overall course of action. But despite the fact that everyone in the book seems to question it, which... I mean, fair. Like, you can look back at, like, the Neville thing at the start of the story and be like, is Harry actually doing this because it's better or because it seems cool to him?
Yeah.
Which is hard to say.
Well, I think in the grand arc, like the final, one of the last chapters is when his relationship with Draco basically disintegrates, and I find it to be one of the saddest chapters, but it's also like, that's when it kind of comes to the fore that his relationship with Draco wasn't all great, and it was kind of manipulative, and as much as he was trying to make the world better and make Draco's life better, he didn't. Draco hates him now, and he hurt Draco a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, I still don't have a problem with the friendship that Harry tried to have with Draco, even though...
I mean, what's... Like, sure, he harmed Draco a lot, but, like, I mean, we also have to think back that Harry just killed his father.
Yeah.
Which I think probably impacted how if you put that part of it aside, like, it becomes a lot less clear-cut how much Harry harmed Draco. Because, I mean, like, he can cast the Patronus now. Like, Slytherin is on its way to being healed somewhat by the end of the story, which is, like, a very significant improvement for Draco.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that involves some manipulation, like, putting aside Lucius's death, like, that is, like, Harry did do things that improved Draco's life.
Yeah. I don't know, the calculus is hard to do, because I am reminded now of Scott Alexander's article about how socialism was the big thing in the early 1900s, where obviously anyone with a modicum of intelligence and an ability to read could and did come to the conclusion that, like, look, socialism is the only moral correct form of government, and we should all be implementing it, and, you know, a lot of people did, because that is just where all the calculations lay, and then it turned out that, oh, you starved tens of millions of people to death and imposed a totalitarian regime, and it turns out you were wrong about socialism. So, you know, maybe sometimes the calculus is wrong, and we should consider that sometimes might be a whole lot more than a rationalist would naively assume.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that you expect it to ultimately benefit is, like, a legitimate reason to justify doing it. Like, a lot of people are overemphasizing the short-term costs to meanness here, I think. Hermione, etc. Because even if it turns out, like, it's probably not going to ruin Padme's life.
No.
And if it might help, then, like, look at it. I don't know.
From everything we see, it helps Padme's life a lot. It's just that, you know, his motives are the things that are bad.
Right.
That he was, you know, I don't know. I disagree that thinking things through and following through on principles you have arrived to rationally or logically or whatever is a bad thing rather than going on your feelings, because fucking feelings are wrong a lot too. Feelings are what tell you that black people are subhuman, you know? Feelings are what tell you that Jews are dirty. The feelings can be trusted as much as your logic can, probably a lot less, in fact.
I really hope someone doesn't edit that.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've said, I don't know how many hundreds of hours of recording there is of me just talking. You can take anything out of context and make me look terrible now.
I mean, you have to specifically be cutting out the parts that put implied quote marks around those things.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So I guess if someone is hearing this for the first time, I do not hold either of those opinions, using them as examples of how terribly, terribly wrong feelings can be about things.
Yeah. I was thinking of stuff like, you know, not flipping the lever on the trolley problem, but
okay.
I mean, I guess bigotry also
is something a little less emotionally, yeah, loaded. Yeah, I think people who want everyone just to, like, stop logicking and start feeling just don't really care if they're right. They're like, I feel like I'm right, and I don't want to do the work or don't feel like I should do the work of thinking things through and demonstrating to others. It's just that my emotions are correct, and how dare you? How dare you, sir?
I mean, I don't think they hold that opinion explicitly.
No.
Because it's obviously, obviously flawed. But, I mean, that's... I don't know how accurate the model is of them. But, I mean, I don't think they hold a developed opinion on, like a intellectual argument for why... Well, because obviously they don't... They want to just feel things. They just, they just, like, feel that they're right.
You're right. I'm probably being anti-charitable, but...
I
just get that feeling sometimes.
Charity aside, I still think that it's kind of ridiculous that they are like that. That they think that, like, you just pay attention to the feelings and everything works out, because it doesn't.
Yeah. Just as long as you have the right feelings, man.
Well, okay, I mean, yes, if you have all the right feelings, then go right ahead. But I mean, it's very easy to observe that not everyone does. So I'd much rather have a system that is generalizable.
Yeah, I think my problem is that, like, the when it comes to, you know, do you have the right feelings or not, the only way to determine who has the right feelings, I guess, is how loudly and passionately they can express their feelings. There's no way to judge different feelings. And that's why, like, I enjoy, or I put more stock in logic and reason and stuff, because then we can actually determine these are good feelings and we should encourage them, and these are bad feelings and we should discourage them, rather than, like, you are disgusting because you are a racist, and or you are disgusting because you would marry someone of a different race, right? Like, there's no argument between those two. There's just two conflicting feelings.
Right. And I mean, sometimes I worry that rationalists are not actually doing the reason things through and choose the best feeling thing. They are instead just, like, coming up with better rationalizations for their initial feelings.
Yeah, that could be.
Which, I don't know how to determine that. So, I guess we just kind of have to hope that we're doing okay.
Yeah.
Unless we can find a way to... The thing is that, like, if you change your mind on something because of reasoning, then that's pretty strong evidence that you're actually valuing the reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of, like, I don't know if there are any major opinions I held that were changed by my reasoning on this account.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to tell for me.
Right. Well, I really should start keeping a journal of what things I've changed my mind on, because once I change my mind, it, like, almost becomes a background fact, and I forget that this used to be something I thought the other way about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, I mean, I'm not sure. I feel like that might happen to me too. Like, I mean, I'm not sure if I could tell.
I do know that I am explicitly far more capitalist now than I used to be. Like, when I was in high school, I was straight up socialist.
Oh, okay, yes. I mean, David's arguments have been generally pretty reasonable. And, I mean, not all of them.
No, I think he goes to an extreme I would not go to, but I have in general been swayed away from socialism over the past 10 years.
He goes to, like, I mean, I don't... I think anarcho-capitalism is good enough to be worth trying, maybe? But, I also realize that any major change to society might just break everything.
Right.
I don't know how much is there because of, like, cultural evolution, and how much is there because just people are dumb. I guess there's overlap.
Yeah. Never mind. That has nothing to do with Harry Potter, so I'm not gonna, yeah. I did want to bring up one thing from a episode before this latest episode, which I thought was interesting, that got mentioned in the Discord.
Mm-hmm.
So when Harry taught Draco how to cast Patronus, there was a lot of talk about Harry saying you couldn't cast the Patronus with a thought like that Muggles are dirty and don't, you know, aren't real people. And Brian brought this up, and this is something I had always thought too. Like, I didn't understand why that mattered. like, why there was all this focus on you can't use that thought to cast a Patronus, because, I mean, there's, like, almost no thoughts you can use to fuel Patronus, right? There's only, like, the one or two happiest, most important thoughts, and that's why they're special. And so, like, whenever Harry says, you couldn't use that thought to fuel Patronus, I was like, yeah? Right! Almost no thought! How does this count as a logical argument?
My impression was that, like, it's when you look at, like, the wanting to spread the news thing, with the Patronus communication, I feel like your initial, you might need like an initial strong spark to start Patronus, but then like all of your happy thoughts can feed into it, or it might have something to do with the first time you cast the spell.
Okay,
because we don't see Harry focusing, or I'm not sure how explicitly it discusses him what his thoughts are every time he casts Patronus.
Yeah,
but I feel like there is a wider breadth of thought that can contribute to the Patronus in some way than those initial ones that he had to use the first time to start it off.
Gotcha. And you know, being raised a Jehovah's Witness, reading that explanation of how the messaging Patronus worked, that you just want to share this good news with people because it so fills you with joy and you want them to feel it, I was like, oh my god, that's totally my birth religion. Like, they would literally say we are spreading the good news as what they called their going door to door and knocking, you know, getting people converted thing. It was a neat callback for me.
That's just the literal translation of gospel, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I certainly recognize the phrase, despite not being raised Jehovah's Witness.
Okay. What were you raised?
I wouldn't. Catholic,
okay.
So, like, not as strong a connection, I guess.
Yeah. There were a couple people in the Discord that answered me as well. Griffin Tabor said, I think its thoughts about improving the world should work to fuel the Patronus. The fact that your thought of killing all Muggleborns doesn't should be evidence it's not actually a great thought. Which was, you know, another cool interpretation. And then Zalbo says, I think the idea is less you couldn't use that to cast a Patronus, and more you can't think about that sort of thought and cast a Patronus at the same time. They don't fit together. So, I'm glad I brought it up, because I now have, like, three different answers that are all pretty, pretty good.
I think more it's that, like, I think the idea is that it's motivated by hate, because part of me is thinking, like, well, if you had, like, a very twisted view on things, and somehow that was, in fact, a happy thought for you, could you not use it to power the Patronus?
I mean, if your thought was, like, to wipe out smallpox, that might be fueled by hate against smallpox, but might be able to fuel the Patronus, so possibly?
I don't feel like, like, draw a comparison, I don't think Harry's motivated by his hate of death. He's motivated by his love of life.
Yeah, exactly.
That contrast between, like, Harry and the Dark Lords.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could, like, motivate a Patronus by hate of smallpox, but, like, a desire for people to be free from smallpox? Sure.
Okay.
And, I feel like it might be possible if someone were actually of the mindset that Muggles, if someone was actually, like, had a vision of a wizarding world that was, like, much better due to not having to deal with Muggles, that might work. But I don't think that's how anyone is actually working there. It's motivated by a hate for Muggles, not by love for wizards.
I wonder if, like, a white supremacist racist person could fuel a Patronus by, like, picturing the beautiful paradise of just white people, and, like, not about wiping out black people or anything, just, like, if we had our own island somewhere and all the white people went there, wouldn't that be wonderful? Like, that would be a weird-ass Patronus.
Yeah, but, like, I think it's probably possible.
Yeah.
I feel like it's not about actually whether or not the thought is good, but about, like, the emotions it causes.
Okay, whether it fills you with, like, purity and ambition and love and stuff?
Right. Which, I'm not sure. But it would be weird to have, like, is it how phoenixes work? I don't know if, like, HPMR has, like, an actual, like, ethic, like, moral realism that hands things down like that.
No, I don't think it does either. It's much more of a emotion of the user-based.
But I don't know if phoenixes are...
Because phoenixes come to people who are, like, the cutting edge of courage, right? They're like, I am ready to kill myself, lay down my life, and sacrifice myself for this cause. And the phoenix doesn't really judge what the cause itself is. They just judge how courageous the person is, right?
So have phoenixes come to really courageous evil people?
I don't think so. And maybe that's like a... Well, I mean, it depends on who you ask. Because if you ask the people who are against Dumbledore, they would say yes.
Well,
obviously,
well, yes,
they do.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, huh. I don't know if, like... There's the other interpretation that evil people are not, like... It's very difficult to become a completely evil person from good motivations. That, like, obviously you can make mistakes and cause harm, but, like, being, like, obviously evil and still having good motivations can be much harder, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people who try to create socialist utopias had good motivations.
Right, and, like, that's causing a lot of harm, but I wouldn't describe those people as evil.
Right.
But misguided.
Speaking of which...
I think there's a distinct, like, evil thing.
Yeah, you're right.
Although I wouldn't know exactly how to describe it.
I don't know, now I kind of want to sit down with Eliezer and ask him, like, how does the Patronus work? Could someone with, you know, a truly shining, loving ambition who thinks things that we consider evil summon a Patronus?
I suspect the answer is yes, but I'm not sure. Something else you were going to say?
No, not really. I think that covers pretty much everything at this point. Did you have more things?
Not really, no. Actually, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up. So there was some discussion of why Hermione did not open the letter the message that Harry wrote describing how to cast the Patronus. To go now. It seemed clear to me that, like, Hermione probably understands the, like, don't share information thing. But, when it's potentially dangerous. I don't know if Harry ever described to her exactly why it was dangerous. I think he does.
I don't think he ever went into any detail, though. He just said, like, this could be dangerous, so don't open it unless you really need it, kind of thing.
I don't think the note written had that, but, like, when he went to talk to her at the end of the last chapter, I think it was, she went up to him and asked if... That was after she was given the letter, right? Like, and that was given, like, back when he first cast it, right?
I think so.
So, like, she read the note a while ago, and then she comes up to him in one of these chapters and asks if he can teach her it. And he says no, and I think elaborates further on why he can't.
Damn it, I wish I could remember where that was exactly so we can look it up.
It should be in chapter 50? 49? Something like that.
I am pulling it up now.
So... It seems weird to me that they're confused by this, and, like, attributing it to just, like, Hermione wanting to, like, it would be wrong to not listen to Harry on this, like, I feel like that's oversimplifying Hermione's, I mean, she definitely does care about, like, doing the right thing, but I don't think that's her only motivation here, like, there are, in fact, legitimate reasons to do the right and wrong things, other than just, like, having a perception that they are right or wrong. And I feel like they are boiling it down to this, like, this is the deontologically wrong thing, therefore don't do it, rather than, like, looking at the reasons why it's the wrong thing to do.
That was most of what was being said in the Discord.
Mm-hmm. And there are legitimate reasons to not do things beyond just it being seen as wrong. And I think Hermione, understands that. She doesn't just boil it down to, this is wrong, I don't do it.
Okay, that she's, alright, she's thought it through more.
I don't know if she's explicitly thinking it in her head. I'm sure,
she's already internalized it enough.
Yeah, exactly, she's internalized why things are wrong. And, if she saw that most of the reasons that, not following, I don't want to say disobeying, but, betraying people's trust, I guess, is bad. I think if most of the reasons that's bad did not apply in this case, that she would not refuse to do it just because it was wrong. I think she, understands on some level, why it is important to do things, rather than just thinking it is the right thing to do.
Right. Yeah, she's smart enough to not just go straight deontology for the sake of deontology.
Right.
She strikes me as someone who has read and internalized Eliezer's essay about, what was it called?
Ethical injunctions?
Yes, exactly. I must not take over the tribe for the good of the tribe, even if it is for the good of the tribe.
Right. Because humans are not that trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Including ourselves, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, this, I'm reading through the Aftermath Hermione Granger here. It's near the bottom of chapter 46, actually.
Oh. Uh-huh. I did not realize it was that early.
Yeah.
I thought it was in, I guess the episodes are bleeding together because I'm listening to them back to back.
Right. But it was, it was a pretty strongly worded note that Harry gave her, and she thinks about, just how serious of a thing this Dementor is, and she still puts it in her pouch and doesn't read it, so.
Right, I thought they discussed it, was that discussion from back in 46? I thought, I think they talked about it more in this episode when, Hermione, after Harry does a thing with Padma, I thought. It was definitely after the Draco stuff. She approaches him and asks to be taught it, them, I think.
I believe that wasn't... You know what? I don't know. I don't want to speculate right now, because it is all getting kind of jumbled up in my head.
We'll leave that for more meta.
Yes, exactly. They can correct us. I really liked the Padma chapter, I gotta say. Gave me a warm, glowy feeling. Harry can have friends after all, and he also does good with his powers.
That feels like a weird takeaway from that chapter.
Perhaps I am a weird person.
It's he also kind of terrorizes her.
But in a good way.
And Hermione does not speak to him for a week.
Yeah. That part's kind of a bummer, but...
I feel like even Yudkowsky here is coming down on the, did Harry really do this right side? I'm feeling a lot of the same things as with the Neville thing.
I thought the image of him and Padma having a warm conversation for 2+ hours where they just talk and get to know each other always made me just happy and warm, because this is one of the few times Harry's ever done that with anyone. It's only been Hermione before, really. I don't think he even quite had that with Draco. So.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Hermione, everyone was missing that piece of it and focusing on the terrorizing part more. because he does set it up so that they do that from Padme's perspective after, he...
Right, we see it...
The word that jumped into my mind was aftercare, I'm not...
Nice. Oh, wow, yeah. He first tormented her and then, came in and be the aftercare person. That's kind of manipulative, I admit, yeah. Holy shit. Well, okay, I still like that chapter, dang it.
Yeah, it's a good chapter. I'm not sure how well placed the warm and fuzzy feelings about it are, but,
right.
It's well written.
I'm really looking forward to them going through the Azkaban arc and seeing how that...
That is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Very, very interested to see how Brian's takes on Coral change during that.
I hope I'm not. Never mind. I totally know that I am a weirdo.
Who isn't?
Yeah. Like, is there something wrong with me? But yes, of course.
There's something wrong with everyone.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's all I got for now.
There's something else that I want to talk about, which is not really directly related to HPMR, sure. But sort of ties into some of the themes that we've seen Brian talk about with the, like, hitting information stuff.
Yeah.
So, some of our listeners may know I am involved in the Minecraft speedrunning community. I have a friend who... So Minecraft has procedural generation, and he's been working on, like, reverse engineering that. And they've made a bunch of developments recently and are trying to, like, have stuff open source so that other people can look at stuff. But, there is a Minecraft streamer. It's like the... something with the Farlands, Kurt J. Mack. I forget what exactly it's called. And he does these big charity streams, which revolve around people not knowing the seed of the world.
Hmm.
And apparently there's this one kid who keeps talking to my friend wanting to reverse engineer Kurt's world. So they're having trouble deciding what exactly to do about this. Like, releasing all the methods for reverse engineering the seeds would... and perhaps end up affecting these charity streams significantly.
Oh, wow.
Due to the, so it's, I did not expect to see such an example of, needing to keep information secret in something as silly as Minecraft seed reverse engineering. But that, like, so apparently it is a thing that people actually are facing.
Wow.
Sometimes.
That's kind of cool. And they've decided to keep it secret?
They have not... I don't think they intend to stop doing the work, but they are... like, this is a legitimate concern, and they are trying to figure out what to do about it.
Nice.
I think they have actually, like... I think they have... they are strongly considering delaying some things due to this, although... they're trying to find other solutions. Like, he talked about making a Minecraft mod that would scramble the generation enough that it wouldn't work.
Okay.
So I thought it was interesting to see, like, some of the themes from HPMR in there.
Yeah, already applicable to real life.
And, like, especially since it's something that, like, Ryan is like, well, I mean, people are gonna figure this out, but, like, no one... like, there are very few people with that expertise who are doing work in this area.
Yeah.
So, like, in lots of things, like, in big things, like, you know, world-ending stuff, like, there's going to be enough interest in things of that much importance that, it's difficult to keep things secret, but, like, in weird stuff like this, like, the amount of people who can actually make progress on this is, or who are interested in doing so, is ridiculously small. So, like, it can actually have significant effects. There are... it's not really anything like the HPMR case, but it's still the general idea of not revealing everything, every information, not, you know, publicizing all information is not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. Can you stay informed on this and let us know what decision they come to, how they end up dealing with it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I will talk about this. The discussion we had was actually in another podcast I do, the Minecraft Speedrunning podcast.
Oh, cool.
So that, you should be able to find it. It was pretty late into the episode, but that should be going up sometime soon. He talked about information, like, he was talking to a Minecraft YouTuber who has not uploaded a video yet, and we talked about their next video, so I cannot actually release the episode until that comes out.
Okay.
But if you want me to, I can link it to you when it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely. You should, like, link it in the Discord, too, because some people are going to listen to this and be interesting to have that.
Okay, yeah, cool. I'll do that.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you for joining me again, and we should do this again in 2 to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds good.
Cool. Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.